At that point, the complainant related the hair-pulling incident. Ms. Griffin strenuously denied it. I asked Mr. Koenig if he wished to press charges. Ms. Griffin interjected sarcastically to the effect of, "Whoop-de-doo, it's my word against his. Who is a judge going to believe? The wife of a DA or the crowned king of the pig hole?" Mr. Koenig stated that he did wish to press charges. Based on the information above, I, Officer Phil Bradstock, ask that the defendant be made to answer to the charges.
From Audrey Griffin to Sulin Lee Siegel.
Hello, stranger! It turns out you were right. Hotel living has finally lost its luster. I'm taking you up on your offer to host us, Shay Lee Siegel. Don't worry. I know you're busy with your big new job, and I wouldn't dream of inconveniencing you. I looked for you at drop-off today. Lincoln told me you're working such long hours you don't even have a Christmas tree. I'm going to swing by my garage and grab my bins of decorations. I'll have your house trimmed by the time you return. Don't try to stop me. You know Christmas is my favorite holiday. How's this for irony? Remember when you were divorcing Barry and Warren handled the whole thing for you gratis, saving you $30,000? Remember when you literally sobbed in gratitude, promising you'd make it up to us? Here's your chance. I'll let myself in with the key under the Cupid. One question. What do you want for dinner? I'm going to have a feast waiting for you when you get home. Blessings, you.
From Elgin Branch to Sulin Lee Siegel. I realize that everything you just learned in that meeting with Agent Strang was an awful lot to lay on you, way outside your job description. But I was completely overwhelmed and couldn't face that briefing alone. As stunned as I was, and as stunned as I still am, I'm also incredibly grateful that Agent Strang finally allowed you to be present. I'm even more grateful to you for standing by my side. Handwritten note from Sue Lin.
LG, my job is to see that S2 runs smoothly. Knowing the particulars of your situation allows me to better perform my job. I am honored you trust me. I promise I won't let you down. From here on, let's not correspond electronically about Bernadette. S.L.
Handwritten answer from Dad.
Sulin, I just got off the phone with Dr. Kurtz. If harm to others is one of the requirements, we have it in spades with Audrey Griffin's foot and the mudslide. Bernadette's talk of overdosing on pills surely constitutes harm to self. Dr. Kurtz is coming by tomorrow to discuss committing Bernadette. E.B.
From Sulin Lee Siegel to Samantha 2 Team, Undisclosed Recipients.
E.B. will be dealing with a personal matter that requires his full attention. All meetings to go forward as scheduled. E.B. to be kept apprised electronically. Thanks.
From Sulin Lee Siegel to Audrey Griffin.
Not a good time for you to stay with us. Emergency at work. I've already paid Moira to pick up Lincoln and Alexandra from school and stay through the week. She's in the spare bedroom. I'm so, so sorry. Maybe a different hotel? A short-term rental house? I'll help you look.
From Audrey Griffin to Sulin Lee Siegel.
I called Moira and told her you wouldn't be needing her. She moved back to her apartment. Your home looks fantastic. The inflatable Santa is waving hello to the passers-by, and the windowsills are edged with snow. Joseph, Mary, and baby Jesus are stuck in the lawn along with my sign. We say Merry Christmas. I should be the one thanking you.
From Dad to the Dean of Admissions at Choate.
Dear Mr. Jessup, as you know, I received a letter from Hillary Lowndes regarding B's acceptance to Choate next fall. When I first read Ms. Lowndes' suggestion that B skip a grade, my instinct was to say no. However, Ms. Lowndes' wise words have stayed with me. I now concur that it is in B's best interest that her immersion in Choate's academic abundance commence immediately. Since B is currently working beyond the third form level, I ask that you consider admitting her this January. Yes, in a month, as a third former. If my memory serves me, at Exeter, there were always students who left mid-year and others who took their place. If we are to proceed, I'd like to start with the paperwork as quickly as possible so B's transition can be a smooth one. Thank you. Sincerely, Elgin Branch.
From Dad to his brother. From Elgin Branch to Van Branch.
Van, I hope this finds you well. I know it's been a while since we spoke, but a family emergency has come up, and I was wondering if you could come to Seattle on Wednesday and stay a couple of days. I'll send you a ticket and get you a hotel room. Let me know. Thanks, LG.
Tuesday, December 21st. A flurry of emails between Uncle Van and Dad.
LG! Ahoy there, stranger!
Sorry, but I don't think I'll be able to make it to your parts. Christmas is a busy time for me. Let's take a rain check. You probably hear that a lot in Seattle. Mahalo, Van. Van, maybe I didn't make it clear. This is an emergency involving my family. I'll cover all costs and any lost wages. The dates are December 22nd through December 25th. Bro, maybe I was the one who didn't make it clear. I have a life in Hawaii. I have responsibilities. I can't hop on a plane just because you decide to grace me with your first email in 5 years and invite me to spend Christmas in a hotel. Van, you're a fucking house sitter. Bernadette is sick. B doesn't know. I need you to spend the day with B while I get Bernadette help. I know we've lost touch, but I want B to be with family. I apologize if the hotel offer appeared brusque. My house is a shambles. The guest room has been boarded up for years because of a hole in the floor that nobody bothered to repair. It all relates to Bernadette's illness. Come on.
LG, I'll do it for B. Book me on the direct flight out of Kona. There's one first-class seat left, and it would be sweet if you could nab it. There's a Four Seasons that shows availability in junior suites facing the water. I found someone to cover for me, so there's no rush flying me back.
Authorization request submitted by Dr. Janelle Kurtz. Request to bill for an off-island appointment. Re Bernadette Fox, Elgin Branch. Bernadette Fox was brought to my attention on December 12th. Her husband, Elgin Branch, a friend of board member Hannah Dillard, wrote me a long-winded and highly emotional letter inquiring about involuntary commitment, attachment number one. Mr. Branch's description of his wife suggested social anxiety, medication-seeking behavior, agoraphobia, poor impulse control, untreated postpartum depression, and possible mania. If I were to take him at his word, I'd posit a dual diagnosis of substance abuse and bipolar type 2. I wrote back to Mr. Branch, explained the law, and suggested his wife seek therapy. Attachment number 2. Yesterday, I received a call from Mr. Branch requesting a face-to-face meeting. He spoke of new developments with his wife, including suicidal ideation. I find Mr. Branch's call curious, if not suspicious, for the following reasons. Number 1. Timing. In my reply to Mr. Branch, I spelled out that in order to have his wife involuntarily committed, she would have to prove imminently harmful to herself or others. Within days, he claims to be in possession of such evidence. Number 2. Resistance to seek therapy. Mr. Branch seems fixated on having Ms. Fox committed at Madrona Hill. Why wouldn't he first seek outpatient therapy for his wife? Number 3. Secrecy. Mr. Branch refuses to divulge specific information over the phone, instead insisting we meet in person. Number 4. Urgency. On the phone today, Mr. Branch begged me to see him immediately, ideally at his office. Taken together, I have reason to question Mr. Branch's motives and credibility. However, I feel I must follow up. Madrona Hill has twice been notified of Ms. Fox's behavior. Since suicide was explicitly mentioned, it is now a matter of liability. Further,
Mr. Branch's tenacity suggests he will not stop contacting me until we meet. I will be in Seattle lecturing at the UW. I've arranged to meet Mr. Branch at his office this evening. I recognize that this is an unusual arrangement, but I am happy to make the extra effort for the friend of a board member. My hope is to convince Mr. Branch to look elsewhere for more appropriate treatment for his wife. I told him my rate was $275 an hour plus time and a half for travel. He understands that we do not bill insurance and that my trip to his office is most likely not covered. From Audrey Griffin to Sulin Lee Siegel.
Hey, you! I got gingerbread houses to decorate after school. When will you be home? I want to know when to pop the roast in the oven.
From Sulin Lee Siegel to Audrey Griffin.
As I said, I'm super busy at work, so I won't be back for dinner. But my mouth is watering just thinking about your famous roast.
From Audrey Griffin to Sulin Lee Siegel.
Don't think I can't take a hint. How about I get in my car and deliver you a plate myself?
From Sulin Lee Siegel to Audrey Griffin.
How about you don't? Thanks, though. That Tuesday, I was in my room doing homework when the phone rang twice, which meant someone was at the gate, and which also signaled dinner. I pushed *7 to open the gate, then went downstairs and met the courier. I was psyched to see he had bags from Tilth. I brought the food to the kitchen. Dad was standing there grinding his jaw. I thought you were working, I said. The last couple of nights he hadn't come home, and I figured he was pulling all-nighters because of Antarctica.
I want to see how you're faring, he said.
Me? I said, I'm fine. Mom came in from the Petit Trianon and kicked off her rain boots.
Hey, look who's home. I'm glad. I ordered too much food. Hi, Bernadette.
Dad didn't hug Mom. I peeled back the edges of the takeout containers and set them in front of our chairs at the kitchen table. Let's do plates tonight. Mom got china from the pantry, and I slid the food onto the nice dishes. But Dad just stood there, his parka zipped.
I have some news. Van is coming tomorrow.
Uncle Van was my only uncle, and therefore my favorite uncle. Mom had a nickname for him, which was, Van, are you going to eat the rest of that branch? He lives in Hawaii, in a caretaker's cottage on a huge estate that belongs to a Hollywood movie producer. The Hollywood producer is hardly ever there, but he must have OCD because he pays Van to go to the house every day and flush the toilets. The Hollywood producer also has a house in Aspen, and one winter the pipes froze and the toilets overflowed and wrecked a bunch of antiques, so he's totally paranoid about it happening again, even though pipes can't freeze in Hawaii. So, as Mom likes to point out, Van flushes toilets for a living. Once we went to Hawaii, and Van took me on a tour of the estate and let me flush the toilets, which was funny. What's Van coming here for? I asked.
Good question.
Mom was now standing frozen, the same as Dad.
A visit, Dad said. I thought he could dog sit while we were away. Why, Bernadette? Do you have a problem with that?
Where's he going to stay? Mom asked.
The Four Seasons. I'm going to pick him up at the airport tomorrow. B, I'd like you to come with me.
I can't, I said. I'm going to see the Rockets Christmas show with youth group.
His plane gets in at 4, Dad said. I'll pick you up at school.
Can Kennedy come? I said and added a big smile.
No, he said. I don't like being in the car with Kennedy, you know that.
You're no fun. I threw him my meanest Kubrick face and started eating. Dad stomped into the living room, the door banging against the counter. A second later came a thud, followed by swearing. Mom and I ran in and turned on the lights. Dad had crashed into a ton of boxes and suitcases.
What the hell is all this crap? He asked, jumping up.
It's for Antarctica, I said. UPS boxes had been arriving at a terrifying clip. Mom had 3 packing lists taped to the wall, one for each of us. All the boxes were half opened and spilling with parkas, boots, gloves, and snow pants in various stages of unwrap. Hanging out like tongues.
We've pretty much got everything.
Mom stepped expertly among the boxes. I'm waiting on zinc oxide for you. She pointed her foot in the direction of one huge black duffel. I'm trying to find Bee one of those face masks in a color she likes.
I see my suitcase, Dad said. I see Bee's suitcase. Where's your suitcase, Bernadette?
It's right there, Mom said. Dad walked over and picked it up. It just hung there like a deflated balloon.
Why isn't there anything in it? He asked.
What are you even doing here? Mom said.
What am I even doing here?
We were about to have dinner, she said. You didn't sit down. You didn't take off your coat.
I have an appointment back at the office. I'm not staying for dinner.
Let me get you some fresh clothes, at least.
I have clothes at the office.
Why did you drive all the way home, she said, just to tell us about Van?
Sometimes it's nice to do things in person.
So stay for dinner, Mom said. I'm not understanding this.
Me neither, I said.
I'll do things my way, Dad said. You do things your way. He walked out the front door.
Mom and I stood there waiting for him to come back in, all embarrassed. Instead, we heard his Prius glide over the gravel and onto the street.
I guess he really did just come home to tell us about Van, I said.
Weird, said Mom.
Wednesday, December 22nd. Report by Dr. Kurtz.
Patient Bernadette Fox.
Background. Per my authorization request dated 12/21, I had arranged to meet Elgin Branch at the Microsoft campus. Since that request, in which I expressed skepticism of Mr. Branch, my opinion of him and his motives has dramatically changed. In an attempt to illuminate this about-face, I will go into inordinate detail regarding our meeting. Notes on meeting. My lecture at the UW had wrapped up sooner than expected. Hoping to catch the 10:05 ferry, I arrived half an hour early. I was directed to Mr. Branch's administrator's office. Sitting at the desk was a woman in a raincoat with a foil-covered plate in her lap. I asked for Mr. Branch. This woman explained she was a friend of the administrator's and had come to surprise her with dinner. She said everyone was in a meeting in the big theater downstairs. I said I, too, had come on personal business. She noticed the Madrona Hill ID clipped to my briefcase and said something to the effect of, "Madrona Hill? Hi-ho! I'll say that's personal business." The administrator arrived and practically screamed when she saw me talking to her friend with the food plate. She pretended that I was a Microsoft employee. I tried to signal the administrator that I had already identified myself otherwise, but she quickly hustled me into a conference room and pulled down the shades. The administrator handed me a classified FBI file and left. I am unable to divulge its contents other than the salient facts pertaining to Ms. Fox's mental state. She ran over a mother at school. She had a billboard erected outside this woman's home to taunt her. She hoards prescription medicine. She suffers from extreme anxiety, grandiosity, and suicidal thoughts. Mr. Branch arrived, appearing agitated, due to the fact that he was keeping everyone late downstairs, and they had hit a programming bug just before he came up. I promised him I would be quick and handed him a list of some wonderful psychiatrists in the area. Mr. Branch was incredulous. He strongly believed the FBI file contained adequate proof to qualify his wife for inpatient treatment. I expressed my concern at his determination to put his wife on an involuntary hold. He assured me he merely wanted to get her the best care possible. Mr. Branch's administrator knocked and asked if Mr. Branch had reviewed a code fix. Mr. Branch looked at his cell phone and shuddered. Apparently 45 emails had come in while we were talking. He said, "If Bernadette doesn't kill me, reply all will." He scrolled through the emails and barked some code talk about submitting a change list, which his administrator furiously copied down before dashing out. After a spirited back and forth in which Mr. Branch accused me of dereliction of duty, I acknowledged that his wife might be suffering from adjustment disorder, which, I explained, is a psychological response brought on by a stressor, and it usually involves anxiety or depression.
The stressor in his wife's case appears to be a planned trip to Antarctica. In extreme cases, a person's coping mechanisms can be so inadequate that the stressor causes a psychotic break. Mr. Branch almost collapsed with relief that I had finally confirmed there was something wrong with his wife. The administrator entered again, this time joined by two men. There was more jargon involving deploying a code fix. After they left, I told Mr. Branch that the recommended treatment for adjustment disorder is psychotherapy, not a psychiatric hold. I bluntly stated that it is wholly unethical and completely unheard of for a psychiatrist to place a person on an ITA hold without meeting them first. Mr. Branch assured me he was not fixated on having her taken away in a straitjacket, and he asked if there was perhaps an intermediate step. For the third time, the administrator knocked. Apparently, Mr. Branch's fix had worked, and the meeting was over. More people entered the conference room, and Mr. Branch went through a priority list for tomorrow. I was struck by the intensity of it all. I've never seen a group of people so self-motivated working at such a high level. The pressure was palpable, but so was the camaraderie and love for the work. Most striking was the reverence paid to Mr. Branch at his joking, egalitarian nature, even under extreme stress. At one point I noticed Mr. Branch was in his stocking feet, and I realized he was the man in the TED Talk, the one where you stick a computer chip to your forehead and you never have to move a muscle for the rest of your life. It's an extreme version of what I find an alarming trend toward reality avoidance. After everyone left, it was just me, Mr. Branch, and the administrator. I suggested that because Ms. Fox appears to be self-medicating for anxiety, I could refer him to one of my able colleagues who specializes in drug interventions. Mr. Branch was grateful, but because nobody but me could be privy to this FBI file, he asked if I would consider conducting the intervention myself. I said yes. I emphasized the importance of Mr. Branch getting some sleep. His administrator said she'd booked a hotel room for him and would drive him there herself. The next afternoon, Dad picked me up at school and we drove to the airport.
"Are you still excited about Choate?" he asked.
"Yeah," I said.
"I'm really, really glad to hear that," Dad said. Then, "Do you know what a lame duck president is?"
"Yeah."
That's what it was like for me right after I got accepted to Exeter. I felt like I was stuck treading water at middle school. I bet that's how you feel right now.
"Not really."
A lame duck president is when a president has been voted out of office and—
"I know what it is, Dad. What does it have to do with Choate? All the other kids are leaving Gaylor Street and going to another school in the fall like me. So it's like saying the day you start eighth grade, the whole year is a lame duck year. Or when you turn 14, it's a lame duck year until you turn 15. That quieted him down for a few minutes, but he started back up.
"I'm happy to hear you're enjoying youth group," he said. "If you're drawing strength from your time there, I want you to know I fully support it."
"Can I spend the night at Kennedy's?"
"You've been spending a lot of time at Kennedy's," he said, all concerned.
"Can I?"
"Of course you can."
We drove past the rail yards on Elliott Bay with the huge orange cranes that look like drinking ostriches standing sentry over thousands of stacked shipping containers. When I was little, I asked Mom what all those containers were. She said ostrich eggs filled with Barbie dolls. Even though I don't play with Barbies anymore, it still gets me excited to think of that many Barbies.
"I'm sorry I haven't been around much."
It was Dad again. "You're around."
"I'd like to be around more," he said.
"I am going to be around more. It's going to start with Antarctica. The two of us are going to have such a good time there." "The three of us!" I got out my flute and played the rest of the way to the airport. Uncle Van was super tan, his face craggy, and he had whitish peeling lips. He wore a Hawaiian shirt, flip-flops, an inflatable sleeping pillow around his neck,
and a big straw hat with a bandana around it that said, "The Hangover."
Bro!
Van gave Dad a big hug.
Where's Bea? Where's your little girl?
I waved.
You're a big girl. My niece Bea is a little girl.
I'm Bea, I said.
No way.
He held up his hand. High five for growing. I limply slapped him five.
I come bearing gifts.
He removed his straw hat and shucked off more straw hats from under it, each with a Hangover bandana.
One for you,
he put one on Dad's head. One for you, he put one on my head.
One for Bernadette.
I snatched it. I'll give it to her. It was so hideous, I had to give it to Kennedy. As Van stood there smearing chapstick across his gross lips, I thought, I hope nobody sees me at the zoo with this guy. Presentation by Dr. Kurtz to her supervisor.
Patient, Bernadette Fox. Intervention plan. I presented my patient background to Drs. Mink and Crabtree, who specialize in drug interventions. They concurred that due to the component of substance abuse, it is appropriate to stage an intervention. While I am not formally trained in drug interventions, because of the unique circumstances described in my patient background, I have decided to lead it myself. Johnson Model versus Motivational Intervention. For the last decade, Madrona Hill has been moving away from the Johnson model of ambush-style intervention in favor of the more inclusive Miller and Rolnick motivational approach, which studies have shown to be more effective. However, due to the secrecy dictated by the FBI, the Johnson model was chosen. Preparatory meeting. Mr. Branch and I met at Dr. Mink's Seattle office this afternoon. Dr. Mink conducted many Johnson-style interventions in the 1980s and 90s and walked us through its steps. 1. Forcefully present reality to the patient. 2. Family members express love for the patient in their own words. 3. Family members detail the damage the patient has caused. 4. Family members guarantee support in treatment of patient. 5. Family members and health professional explain negative consequences if patient refuses treatment. 6. Patient given opportunity to voluntarily seek treatment. 7. Immediate transfer of patient to treatment center. All hopes are that Bernadette Fox will admit to her illness and check herself into Madrona Hill voluntarily. Signed, Janelle Kurtz.
That night I went to the Radio City Christmas Spectacular with youth group. The first part, with the Rockettes, was annoying. All it was piped-in music while the Rockettes kicked. I thought they'd have at least sung or done some other kind of dancing, but they just kicked in a line facing one direction. They kicked in a line facing the other direction. They kicked in a line with the whole line twirling to songs like "It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas" and "I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus." The whole thing was junk. Kennedy and I were both like, why? Intermission came. There was no reason to go to the lobby because nobody had any money, which meant the best we could do was drink water out of the fountain. So me and all the youth group kids stayed at our seats. As the audience filed back in, the ladies in hair helmets, caked-on makeup, and blinking Christmas pins all started bubbling with excitement. Even Luke and May, who chaperoned us, were standing in front of their seats staring at the red curtain. The theater went dark. A star was projected on the curtain. The audience gasped and clapped way too enthusiastically just for a star.
Today is the most sacred day for all mankind,
boomed a scary voice.
It is the birth of my son, Jesus, the King of Kings.
The curtain flew open. On stage was a manger with a real-life baby Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. God narrated in the most ominous way the story of the Nativity. Shepherds came out with live sheep, goats, and donkeys. With every new animal that trotted out, there were fresh oohs and ahs. "Haven't any of these people ever been to a petting zoo?" Kennedy said. Three wise men entered on a camel, elephant, and ostrich. Even I was like, okay, that's cool. I didn't know ostriches would let you ride them. Then a big black woman walked out, which kind of broke the spell because she was wearing a super tight red dress, the kind you see at Macy's.
"Oh, holy night," she started.
Ecstatic gasps sprung up all around me.
"The stars are brightly shining,"
she sang.
"It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared and the Spirit felt its word."
Something about the tune made me close my eyes. The words and music filled me with the warm glow.
"A thrill of hope. The weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn."
There was a pause. I opened my eyes.
"Fall on your knees,"
she sang, full of startling, loud joy.
"Oh, hear the angels' voices. Oh, night divine."
More voices joined in. A chorus was now on stage above baby Jesus. 50 of them, all black people, dressed in sparkly clothes. I hadn't even seen them arrive. The glow inside me started to harden, which made it difficult to swallow.
"Oh, night, when Christ was born. Oh, night, divine. Oh, night. Oh, night divine."
It was so weird and extreme that I got disoriented for a second, and it was almost a relief when it was over. But the music kept going. I knew I had to brace myself for the next wave. Across the top of the stage, words appeared on a digital scroll. Like the chorus, it just seemed to have materialized. Red dot words glided across.
"Truly he taught us to love one another. His law is love, and his gospel is peace."
A low rumble surrounded me. It was people in the audience rising to their feet, joining in, singing.
"Chains shall he break, for the slave he is a brother, and in his name all oppression shall cease."
I couldn't see the words anymore because of the people in front of me. I stood too.
"Sweet hymns of joy, in grateful chorus raise we with all our hearts. We praise his holy name."
Everyone in the audience started raising their arms halfway up and wiggling their fingers like they were doing jazz hands. Kennedy had put the hangover bandana on. "What?" she said and crossed her eyes. I shoved her. Then the main black lady, who hadn't been singing that loudly, but letting the chorus do all the work, suddenly stepped forward.
"Christ is the Lord."
Her voice roared as the sign flashed.
Christ is the Lord.
It was so joyful and unapologetically religious, I realized that these people, churchy people, as Mom called them, were actually oppressed. And only now could they open up because they were safely among other churchy people. The ladies who looked so nice with their special hairdos and Christmas sweaters, they didn't care how bad their voices were. They were joining in, too. Some threw their heads back and even closed their eyes. I raised my hands to see how it felt. I let my head drop back and my eyes close.
Then ever, ever praise we.
I was baby Jesus. Mom and Dad were Mary and Joseph. The straw was my hospital bed. I was surrounded by the surgeons and residents and nurses who helped me stay alive when I was born blue, and if it weren't for them, I would be dead now. All those people I didn't even know, I couldn't pick them out of a lineup if I had to, but they had worked their whole lives to get the knowledge that ended up saving my life. It was because of them that I was in this magnificent wave of people and music.
Oh, night, divine, oh, night, oh, night, divine.
There was a jab at my side. It was Kennedy punching me. Here. She handed me her hangover bandana because tears were burning down my cheeks. Don't turn all Jesus on me. I ignored her and threw my head back. Maybe that's what religion is, hurling yourself off a cliff and trusting that something bigger will take care of you and carry you to the right place. I don't know if it's possible to feel everything all at once, so much that you think you're going to burst. I love Dad so much. I was sorry I was so mean to him in the car. He was just trying to talk to me, and I didn't know why I couldn't let him. Of course I noticed he was never home. I had noticed it for years. I wanted to run home and hug Dad and ask him to please not be away so much, to please not send me off to Chote, because I loved him and Mom too much. I loved our house and ice cream and Kennedy and Mr. Levy too much to leave. I felt so full of love for everything, but at the same time, I felt so hung out to dry there like nobody could ever understand. I felt so alone in this world and so loved at the same time. The next morning, Kennedy's mom came in to wake us. Shit, she said, you're going to be late. She threw a bunch of breakfast bars at us and went back to bed. It was 8:15. World Celebration Day started at 8:45. I quickly got dressed and ran down the hill and across the overpass without stopping. Kennedy is always late to school, and her mom doesn't even care, so she stayed and ate cereal and watched TV. I ran straight to the equipment room where Mr. Kangana and the first graders were doing a final rehearsal. I'm here, I said, waving my shakuhachi. Sorry! The little kids looked so sweet in their Japanese kimonos. They started climbing on me like monkeys. Through the wall, Ms. Goodyear announced us, and we entered the gym, which was packed with parents aiming video cameras.
And now, she said, we'll have a performance by the first graders. Playing along is eighth grader B Branch.
The first graders lined up. Mr. Kangana gave me the signal, and I played the first few notes. The kids started singing.
So, son, so, son.
They did a great job singing in unison, except for Chloe, who had lost her first tooth that morning and stood there frozen, sticking her tongue into the slot where her tooth had been. We took a pause, and then it was time to sing the song in English with my choreography. The first graders began singing and moving like elephants, their hands clasped and arms hanging down like swaying trunks.
Little elephant, little elephant.
Just then, I had a feeling. There she was, Mom standing in the doorway wearing her huge dark glasses. little elephant, little elephant. I laughed because I knew Mom would think it was funny that now I was the one crying. I looked up, but she was gone. It was the last time I saw her.
Friday, December 24th, from Dr. Janelle Kurtz. To the Board of Directors. I would like to inform you that I hereby resign from my position as Director of Psychiatry at Madrona Hill. I love my job. My colleagues are like family. However, as Bernadette Fox's admitting psychiatrist, and in light of the tragic and mysterious events surrounding her intervention, it is a decision I must make. Thank you for the many wonderful years and for the opportunity to serve. Sincerely, Dr. Janelle Kurtz.
Dr. Kurtz's report on Mom's intervention.
Patient, Bernadette Fox. We were planning to confront Ms. Fox at her dentist's office where she had a 10 a.m. appointment. Dr. Neergaard was informed of our plan and had set aside an empty office for our use. Elgin Branch's brother, Van, was to pick up the daughter B at school and go to the zoo until further notification. We did not want Ms. Fox to see her husband's car at the dentist's office when she arrived, therefore it was decided that Mr. Branch and I would meet at his home and take my car to Dr. Neergaard's office. The Fox Branch Residence. It is the former home of the Straight Gate School for Girls, a grand but decrepit brick building sitting on an immense sloping lawn overlooking Elliott Bay. The inside is in shocking disrepair. Rooms are boarded up. It is dark and damp, with a musty smell so overpowering I could taste it. That a family with significant income would live in such deteriorating conditions suggests a lack of self-respect, ambivalence about their financial social superiority, and poor reality testing. I arrived at the branch residence at 9 a.m. and found several cars, including a police car, parked haphazardly in the driveway. I rang the doorbell. Ms. Lee Siegel, Mr. Branch's administrator, opened the door. She explained that she and Mr. Branch had just arrived. FBI agent Marcus Strang was in the middle of informing them that Manjula, the internet assistant, had stolen all his miles on American Airlines last week. Mr. Branch was shocked that Agent Strang was only telling him this now. Agent Strang explained that they did not take the threat seriously, as internet thieves usually don't leave their basement, let alone hop on planes. But last night the miles had been used to purchase a one-way ticket from Moscow to Seattle, with the plane arriving tomorrow. Further, Manjula had been sending emails to Ms. Fox, asking her to confirm that she'd be alone in the house while Mr. Branch and his daughter were in Antarctica. Mr. Branch practically buckled in shock and had to find a wall for support. Ms. Lee Siegel rubbed his back and assured him his wife would be safe at Madrona Hill on Orcas Island. I reiterated that there was no such guarantee, that I would have to evaluate Miss Fox before I could place her on an involuntary hold. Mr. Branch began to misdirect his rage and powerlessness onto me, accusing me of bureaucratese and stonewalling. Ms. Lee Siegel interrupted, pointing out we were late for Dr. Neergaard's. I asked Agent Strang if the intervention would place us in any physical danger, considering Manjula was on the loose. He assured us we were safe, and that ample police protection was in place. Quite shaken, we all headed out the front door when suddenly from behind we heard a woman's voice.
"Elgie, who are all these people?"
It was Bernadette Fox. She had just entered through the kitchen. A quick visual assessment indicated an attractive woman in her early 50s, of medium height and medium build, with no makeup and a pale but healthy complexion. She wore a blue raincoat and underneath it jeans, a white nubby cashmere sweater and loafers with no socks. Her long hair appeared brushed and tied back with a scarf.
There was nothing about her appearance that indicated she did not care for herself. Indeed, she came off as well-groomed and chic. I turned on my tape recorder. What follows is a transcript. Fox.
Is it B? Nothing happened to B. I just saw her at school and...
Branch. No, B is fine. Fox.
Then who are these people?
Dr. Kurtz. My name is Dr. Janelle Kurtz. Branch.
You're supposed to be at the dentist, Bernadette.
Fox. How did you know that? Dr. Kurtz. Let's have a seat. Fox.
Why, who are you? LG?
Branch. Shall we do it here, doctor? Dr. Kurtz. I suppose. Fox.
Do what here? I don't like this. I'm leaving.
Dr. Kurtz. Bernadette, we're here because we care about you, and we want you to get the help you need. Fox.
Exactly what kind of help? Why are the police outside, and why the gnat?
Dr. Kurtz. We'd like you to sit down so we can present you with the reality of your situation. Fox.
LG, please ask them to leave. Whatever this is, let's talk about it privately. I mean it. These people don't belong here.
Branch.
I know everything, Bernadette. So do they.
Fox.
If this is about Dr. Nirgard, if he told you, if somehow you found out... I canceled the appointment 10 minutes ago. I'm going on the trip. I'm going to Antarctica.
Branch.
Bernadette, please stop lying.
Fox.
Check my phone. See? Outgoing calls. Dr. Nirgard. Dial him yourself. Here.
Branch.
Dr. Kurtz, should we...
Dr. Kurtz. Bernadette, we're concerned for your ability to care for yourself.
Fox. Is this a joke? I really don't understand. Is this about Manjula?
Branch.
There is no Manjula.
Fox.
What?
Branch.
Agent Strang, could you...
Fox.
Agent Strang?
Agent Strang.
Hi, from the FBI.
Branch.
Agent Strang, since you're here, could you perhaps explain to my wife the havoc her actions have wreaked?
Agent Strang.
If this is all of a sudden turned into an intervention, that's not really my thing.
Branch.
I just want...
Agent Strang.
Outside the pay grade.
Branch.
Manjula is an alias for an identity theft ring operating out of Russia. They have been posing as Manjula as a way to capture all of our personal banking information. Not only that, they're coming to Seattle to make their move while B and I are in Antarctica. Is that right, Agent Strang?
Agent Strang.
Pretty much.
Fox.
I don't believe it. I mean, I do believe it. What kind of move?
Branch.
Oh, I don't know. Cleaning out our bank accounts, brokerage accounts, property title, which shouldn't be that hard because you've handed them all our personal information and passwords. Manjula even requested power of attorney.
Fox.
That's not true. I haven't heard back from her for days. I was getting ready to fire her.
Branch.
That's because the FBI has been intercepting the emails and responding as you. Don't you get it?
Dr. Kurtz.
Yes, that's a good idea. Bernadette, for you to sit down. Let's all sit down.
Fox.
Not there!
Dr. Kurtz.
Oh!
Fox.
It's wet. Sorry, there's a leak. God, LG, I completely fucked up. Did she take everything?
Branch.
Thank God, nothing yet.
Lee Siegel. Whispers, not audible.
Branch.
Thank you. I forgot.
She cashed in our miles.
Fox.
Our miles? Oh, I'm sick about this. I'm sorry. I'm just in shock.
Dr. Kurtz.
Now that we're comfortable-ish. Oh, my skirt.
Fox.
Is the couch wet?
Sorry. It's that orange color because the flashing on the roof is rusted and the water drips through.
It usually washes out with lemon juice and salt.
Who are you?
Dr. Kurtz.
Dr. Janelle Kurtz, it's quite all right. Bernadette, I'd like to keep presenting reality. Because the FBI gained access to your email account, we were able to see that you pondered suicide in the past. You stashed pills for future suicide attempts. You tried to run over a mother at school. Fox.
Don't be ludicrous.
Lee Siegel sighs heavily. Fox.
Oh, shut up. What the hell are you doing here anyway? Will someone open a window and let the gnat out?
Branch.
Stop calling her that, Bernadette.
Fox.
Forgive me, could someone get the admin out of my living room?
Dr. Kurtz. Ms. Lee Siegel, it would be a good idea for you to leave.
Branch. She can stay.
Fox.
Really? She can stay? How's that?
Branch. She's a friend.
Fox. What kind of friend? She is not a friend of this marriage, I'll guarantee you that.
Branch. You're not in charge now, Bernadette.
Fox. Wait a second. What is that?
Lee Siegel.
What?
Fox.
Sticking out of the bottom of your pants?
Lee Siegel.
Me? Where?
Fox.
It's a pair of underwear. You've got panties sticking out of your jeans.
Lee Siegel.
Oh, I have no idea how they got there.
Fox.
You're a Seattle-born secretary, and you have no place in this house.
Dr. Kurtz. Bernadette is right. This is for family only. Lee Siegel.
I'm happy to go.
Agent Strang.
How about I go, too? I'll be right outside.
Goodbyes and the front door opening and closing.
Fox. Please proceed, Captain Kurtz.
Sorry, Dr. Kurtz. Dr. Kurtz.
Bernadette, your aggression toward your neighbor led to the destruction of her home and possible PTSD of 30 children. You have no intention of going to Antarctica. You planned on getting 4 wisdom teeth removed to prevent it. You willingly turned over personal information to a criminal, which could have led to financial ruin. You are incapable of even the most basic human interaction, relying on an internet assistant to buy groceries, schedule appointments, and conduct all basic household duties. Your home is worthy of condemnation by the building department, which indicates to me serious depression.
Fox,
are you still presenting reality to me, or can I say something?
Male voice.
Get him!
Kurtz, Branch. Panic noises. We turn to see a man in a long coat staring at his phone.
Branch, who are you?
Detective Driscoll.
Detective Driscoll, Seattle PD.
Fox.
He's been there the whole time. I passed him on my way in.
Detective Driscoll.
Sorry, I got a little excited. Clemson picked off a pass and ran it in. Pretend I'm not here.
Dr. Kurtz. Bernadette? Elgin would like to begin by expressing his love for you.
Elgin?
Branch. What the hell is wrong with you, Bernadette? I thought you were even more upset than I was about those miscarriages, but really, the whole time all you cared about was some stupid house. What you went through with the 20-mile house?
I go through shit like that 10 times a day at Microsoft. People get over things. It's called bouncing back. You won a MacArthur grant. 20 years later, you're still nursing the injustice of a fight you had with some English asshole, a fight you brought upon yourself. Do you realize how selfish and self-pitying that is? Do you?
Dr. Kurtz. Okay. So, it's important to acknowledge there's a lot of hurt, but let's stay in the here and now. Elgin. Why don't you try expressing your love for Bernadette? You had mentioned what a wonderful mother...
Branch. And you're back there in your Airstream, lying to me left and right, outsourcing your life, our lives, to India? Don't I get a vote in that?
You're afraid of getting seasick when we're crossing the Drake Passage. There's a way to deal with it. It's called a scopolamine patch. You don't arrange to get 4 wisdom teeth removed and lie to me and be about it. People die getting their wisdom teeth pulled, but you'll do it just to avoid small talk with strangers? What the hell is Bea gonna think when she hears this? And all because you're a failure? How about a wife? How about a mother? What happened to coming to your husband? Why do you have to spill your guts out to some architect you haven't seen for 20 years? God, you're sick. You make me sick, and you're sick.
Dr. Kurtz, another example of love is a hug.
Branch, you've gone insane, Bernadette. It's like aliens came down and replaced you with a replica, but the replica is a drag queen, demented version of you. I became so convinced of this that one night while you slept, I reached across and felt your elbows because I thought no matter how good they made the replica, they wouldn't have gotten the pointy elbows right. But there they were, your pointy elbows. You woke up when I did that. Do you remember?
Fox. Yes, I remember.
Branch. When I caught myself, I realized, oh my God, she's going to take me with her. Bernadette has gone crazy, but I will not let her pull me down with her. I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'm a team leader of over 250 people who rely on me, whose families rely on me. I refuse to plunge off the cliff with you.
Fox, sound of crying.
Branch, and for this, you hate me? You mock me as a simpleton because I love my family, because I love my job, because I love books? When did this contempt for me start, Bernadette? Do you have an exact date, or do you have to check with your internet assistant who you pay 75 cents an hour but is actually the Russian mafia who has cashed in all our miles and is heading to Seattle to kill you? Jesus! I have to stop talking.
Dr. Kurtz. How about we put a pin in love and let's move on to the damage that Bernadette's behavior has caused?
Branch, are you joking? The damage she has caused?
Fox, I know the damage.
Dr. Kurtz,
great. Next is, I forgot what's next. Recovered reality, love, damage. Detective Driscoll.
Don't look at me.
Dr. Kurtz. Let me check my notes.
Detective Driscoll. Is this a good time to ask? Is this anyone's coffee? I put mine down somewhere.
Dr. Kurtz.
The guarantee of support.
Branch.
Of course I'll support you. You're my wife. You're Bea's mother. We're all lucky there's a dime left to our name so I can pay for this support.
Fox. I'm sorry, LG. I don't know how I can make it up to you.
You're right. I need help. I'll do anything. Let's start by spending time in Antarctica. Just the three of us. No computers. No work.
Branch.
How about you don't blame this on Microsoft?
Fox.
I'm just saying. The three of us are family without any distractions.
Branch.
I'm not going to Antarctica with you. I'd throw you overboard the first chance I got.
Fox. Is the trip canceled?
Branch. I'd never do that to Bea. She's been reading books and doing reports on Antarctica for the last year.
Fox.
I'm confused then.
Dr. Kurtz.
Bernadette, I'd like to suggest that we work together over the next several weeks.
Fox.
You're going on the trip with us? That's so exotic.
Dr. Kurtz.
No, I'm not. You need to concentrate on getting yourself better, Bernadette.
Fox.
I still don't quite know how you fit in.
Dr. Kurtz. I'm a psychiatrist at Madrona Hill.
Fox. Madrona Hill? The loony bin? Jesus Christ, you're shipping me off to a loony bin? LG, you're not.
Detective Driscoll.
Shit, are you?
Branch.
Bernadette, you need help.
Fox.
So you're going to take Bea to Antarctica and lock me up at Madrona Hill? You can't do that!
Dr. Kurtz.
We'd like you to come voluntarily.
Fox.
Oh, Jesus. Is that why Van is here, to keep Bea distracted with snow leopards and carousel rides while you're locking me up?
Branch.
You still have no concept of how ill you are, do you?
Fox.
LG, look at me. I'm in the weeds. I can get myself out. We can get out of this together. For us. For B. But I won't work with these invaders. I'm sorry, but I've had to pee since I got here. Or do I need doctor's approval?
Dr. Kurtz, go right ahead.